quorum, so might as well start it all off. Jeff is taking his first full day of running the board and taking a little mini vacation, so he'll be a little late. We'll start out as we usually do with introductions, and we'll just start right there.
Andrew Gunther with PLS Engineering.
Gaither Holmes.
Mike Odorn, Olson Engineering.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramis.
Don Hardy, Berger Email.
Greg Schaefer, Clark County Development Engineering.
Rosie Shaw, Development Engineering.
Steve Bacon, Clark Regional Wastewater.
Hal Brown, Community Planning.
Seth Pauling with AKS.
Buzz Swanson, Public Works.
Ah, you beat us to it.
All right. Reminder, the meetings are recorded and posted on the website. Also, if you've got your cell phones, please turn them to silence, vibrate, something that doesn't make a lot of noise and disturb the rest of the group. Moving forward, we have the minutes attached to the packets here from last month. We need to review.
I've reviewed them, and except for the length and detail contained therein, I would move to approve.
A second.
Got a motion and a second to approve last month's minutes. Any discussion? All right. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Let's see. Upcoming events, work sessions.
Upcoming events. Thank you, Steve. For a shorter month of February, the board has a very full agenda. You'll see on page two there. If they have work sessions that are typically held weekly on Wednesdays, can begin as early as 9 a.m. So check the Clark County grid for updates on that. Also, weekly hearings usually begin every Tuesday at 10 a.m. in the morning, with the exception of the first Tuesday of the month, begins typically at 6 p.m. Scheduled work sessions include the Clark County Natural Hazards Waste, Natural Hazards Mitigation Plan, scheduled for next week, Wednesday, February the 8th, 10 a.m. Another work session on overview of homeless crisis response system in Clark County a week from that, Wednesday, February 15th, 11 a.m. And then finally, a work session on Clark County schools, Wednesday, February 22nd, 10:30 a.m. For Planning Commission work sessions and hearings, actually this evening, a work session, prohibit nuisance fowl within the urban growth boundary of the city of Vancouver. That is at 5:30 this evening. And then finally, a hearing on that same subject on Thursday, February 16th, 6:30 p.m.
Greg, just one question. I know on February 8th, the hearing room is being taken up with the Growth Board of Appeals. So where might that work session be going for?
I do have some interesting work sessions. I do not know for sure, but I will ask on that and let you know. So
what?
But
yeah, what's that all about? Natural Hazards Mitigation Plan?
I'm not sure.
Roger?
Dean, any that strike the bell?
No.
No? Okay, we will ask the why and the where on that one then.
The what and where at least.
Or the what? What are nuisance levels?
Pieces of eggs, chickens and ducks.
But I'm not sure on that.
Stuff on the restaurant property inside the.
Interesting.
So I will follow up with the board on that. After that.
All right. Member announcements. Anybody got? Nothing? All right. Then we will move on to the first topic of the evening, dedications of open space, critical areas, undevelopable remnant lands, and stormwater tracts.
I'm down there waiting for Jeff's novel.
coming. Commissioner meeting ran a little late. Since you haven't met several of you, my name is Dean Denning. I'm the Clean Water Manager of Buck County. Jeff Schnabel, who is joining us momentarily, has been working on this dedications policy. And I guess I'll start with just an overview as to why, although you probably guess. Over the years, we've been, the county has been given land by developers for various reasons and really had no mechanism for deciding whether or not the land. It just sort of came to us and we took it, and besides not tracking that very well, there's other concerns obviously, because those pieces and parts of land eventually will grow up, and a homeowner will complain, hey, who's responsible for this? It's not mine. And so we're sort of like complaint driven on maintaining these properties. And so they really added up, and Jeff will have sort of a the number of these properties that we have to be able to provide more detail, but it's really not in our bottom line. And so we came up with this policy as another option for at least for covering some of those costs. Of course, the HOA option, giving it over to the HOA, or possibly having some lots that are strangely shaped, perhaps, whatever that might be. You have other options, obviously. But we needed to put something in place where we could decide and sort of make that decision whether or not it was to the benefit of Clark County to accept that dedicated land or not. And then have a plan for stepping through that if we weren't interested in it. And so, yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Jeff.
Jeff Knobles, our infrastructure manager of Clark Water. And yes, recover from your rolling workout?
Yes, yes. I took the elevator. I didn't know. That's still warming up. So we're, how far do we get to do this?
Just the overview of, yeah, okay. Of why this policy is in front of us.
Yeah, I apologize. Probably should have gotten this out to you folks a little sooner. Just maybe take a peek through before we talk, but I think we can walk through it fairly simply. And as Dean probably said already, we're really just trying to address for Public Works kind of a what has become a sustainable situation as far as how we deal with excess properties that are needed for the county during the development process, right? So it's a little add-ons, little remnants that can't fill a lot, right? But don't know what else to do with, and oftentimes they either get dedicated as a separate tract to the county, or sometimes they kind of get glommed on to the existing stormwater area, so you have a fence around a little bit of property where the storm infrastructure is, and then kind of glom on some reed canary grass or some critical areas or whatever that can't be used. And historically, those have sort of just been inherited by the Clean Water Program on the stormwater side or by lakes and lands. And then, while we love to have property and all, we don't necessarily have a mechanism or legal authority in some cases or resources to take care of those things to the level that we would expect to take care of a regular stormwater facility or lakes and lands parcel, if that makes any sense. Right? So we're trying to get out of the way of giving the county a little bit of leeway to select the types of properties that we may want to inherit through the process, but also not make it so onerous that there's no mechanism for the development community to offload those properties back there. So as you read through this, that's kind of what we're trying to shoot for, the middle ground, so there's opportunity for the county to be able to control a little bit about what we take on cost-free. And then, if there are problems that you all need to get rid of that we don't really want, there's still a mechanism in here for there to be a payment up front to sort of offset some of our costs for maintenance. All right. So that's sort of a short way through the background of this. So if you want to flip to the back where it says practice provisions, essentially we're saying that a few of the county public works division managers would have kind of yay or nay authority to say, Development X wants to give us this piece, maybe Bill Beardby out of Parks or Dean, you know, a few other folks who would be in control of those properties can evaluate those and say, well, hey, that fits in with our open space plan or with the greenway or what have you. There's a number of reasons why the county might want to take on a piece like that, right? But basically establish whether we're going to accept or not accept a piece of property kind of early in the process if possible. And then depending upon the answer there, we would either take the property or if we don't want it, the developer then would have the option of, you know, deeding it to the homeowners association, or I guess that's probably the only other option, right? Go HOA with it, which I think I've seen done quite a bit anyway. Or midway through the page, you don't want to get to the HOA, or the HOA doesn't want it. There's a mechanism here where you could turn that property over to us, but the way we've written it is to try to get an upfront payment that will offset our costs to take care of that thing for 30 years. The dollar figure is not totally ridiculous, I don't think. The way we came up with that, I think we're looking at like $500 a year for any tract less than an acre. If it's over an acre, it's $500 an acre a year. And it's upfront payment for an acre or less, it'd be $15,000 that the county would then hold and use to do, you know, the kind of things that we have to do on these properties. And that typically ranges from mowing fire breaks around them to taking limbs off of people's fences, which we've done a ton of here in the last few weeks, still doing. You know, anything with, you know, uninvited tenants living there that we have to deal with, all kinds of things that happen on these properties. And this would just give us a little pot of money to be able to do that without running into issues with how we use our clean water fee, issues with how much money Happy and Legacy Lands is able to spend. They're statutorily limited the amount of Legacy Lands money that can be used for maintenance. And so we're kind of trying to limit that loss. The only other pieces of this, so that's kind of that open space particular part. There's a couple of other things that addresses tracks, like an entire track. So number two, for stormwater tracks that have stormwater infrastructure on them, I mentioned at the beginning there's a situation where there's a small fence facility and then a bunch of land that gets glommed onto it and donated. So on those, we want to kind of limit that excess property around the fence, right? So that there's not a whole bunch of extra sort of no man's land out there. That's what part two tries to get at. And I think we put a, just pulling a number out of the air essentially, and said, well, nothing more than 25% larger than the area that's actually dedicated to stormwater control, right? And then the third part of that piece was to, on the fencing part, I'd like to move towards getting that fence as close to the edge of the property that's being given to us as possible, because of just the difficulty in trying to maintain areas that are outside of fences but still hemmed in by a bunch of other properties. So if we can put a fence around what we have to take care of, then it's an easier operation. Number three, right at the end of the page, is a really simple one, but this doesn't happen very often, but we toss it on here as well. Complicates things for us in a number of ways if we have geographically disparate hunks of land that are wrapped into a single parcel number, right?
So we're given this plus this plus this, and there's a couple of them out there that are two or three little pieces, all the same parcel number, and that's caused a few problems. So we're trying to eliminate that as well. So that's kind of a side of this. That's a super quick zip through on this, but kind of wanted to just touch on a couple of things and then see if you guys had thoughts or concerns or comments.
How prevalent is this nowadays? Is this a reaction or response to something or a practice that has taken place in the past, but is not necessarily taking place now? Because it's my understanding that, I mean, that they're going to have an HOA. The HOA has to take care of everything that's within the plat originally. So is this something that we continue to see happen with final plats and dedications? And in the application says any land outside of the lots or the stormwater facility shall be dedicated to Clark County, and they don't have to do anything about it.
It's a little both. I think that the frequency that we see this now is certainly less than we used to. Right? I think that this was largely done in the past. They do still pop up. They are still an issue. But to a certain extent, this is almost sort of formalizing something that's already kind of been happening. Right? The move away from, in fact, you know, dedicating that kind of stuff, counting going towards HOA, I think that's been happening. I wouldn't say it's 100%. There's a few that come through. And because each one is kind of a big deal, we want to kind of emphasize that. I've got 100 of them right now out of 1,200 facilities that county owns. A little over 115 of them or so are in this category of either a blank track or a track that's got a whole bunch of land slammed onto the side of my small parcel. Right. I don't know if that helps.
No. So just to add to that question, so were there regulatory zoning mechanisms that these relate to for mining developments in the past that became greenways? Yeah, I'm trying to be helpful.
I was going to go there too, Don, meaning we're sometimes limited to maximum lot size. And so, therefore, we can't add that area onto a lot.
Yeah.
And therefore, it becomes just some throwaway land that it would have been nice to have included it in the lot, but because of zoning requirements, we couldn't.
What I'm kind of getting to is maybe currently, under the current zoning framework, it may not be as much of an issue. I mean, we went back to the 80s, basically. I think there might have been plats that were done where the county was going to maintain those as open space in a grain belt. And so mechanically, maybe those are a little different than perhaps ones where it was just kind of like, okay, the county had just totally been messing their heart and come along. So I'm not sure if there's a differentiation.
That's a good point. I'm sure you can look back at that a little bit and see if there's what evolution was there.
So one quick one, and I apologize, someone already covered it. In the criteria for acceptance under lands consisting primarily of identified high quality habitat, category one or two wetlands, why are three and four, if they're required by the county to have a conservation covenant, why are those excluded from the county being able to accept them? And then the second part of that is, I think it should also say, and associated buffers. Because the buffers are all actually part of it as well. And then another suggestion in that same section, so you can kind of answer them all together. Should we say the criteria for acceptance would be any area required by the county to be set aside as undeveloped land? So if the county is saying by their ordinance that this is undevelopable and has no use to you, then should the county not accept those pieces? And there's other reasons for that. It might be, and I think that basically covers any of the wetlands. Anything with a conservation covenant over it, anything that maybe has any other type of critical areas like slopes that, you know, very steep slopes, things like that. If they're considering it undevelopable and require it to be set aside, that should be criteria for acceptance.
Well, good.
I was just going to say, I was thinking the same thing in terms of how are those modeled as well. That's kind of what I'm not sure if there's a differentiation between those that were legally described and dedicated to the county, or are those the same things as the covenants that are run through the which are the wetland habitat. There's a question as to
as a model, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
On Eric's points, making this up, but a couple of things. One, the criteria for acceptance, those aren't necessarily hard and fast. Those are examples of parcels that the county may want. And the reason one and two, as opposed to three and four, were included is because of the high quality habitat value of one and two compared to.
I think they can provide a mitigation.
They have some value to the county and to the community in general because you can enhance those low quality wetlands and
charge the developers for it.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time we don't have to dedicate, but if the county is making you set them aside, I also think they should be willing to accept them. So, and it doesn't matter what quality it is, you still need the same conservation covenants and you still have the same restrictions on it. So,
where I was thinking this would really be UNA stuff.
Yeah?
You know, a lot of opportunity to mitigate
non-riparian habitat.
Well, that's gone now. It's the biodiversity, but yeah, biodiversity area.
Probably the size of the parcel comes into some play there too, right? I know the county's doing a bit for large pieces. When we have to mitigate, for example, road projects or something like that, right? There's some ground involved in that as opposed to a little slip and stuff. So the category may or may not make too much difference if it's tiny. So all that kind of has to get evaluated each time. And there again, you know, those are things that. That's kind of why the pay up front bit's in there, because I'm kind of doubting that we're going to be going and open up a bunch of ordinances. Highly doubting. But if we're gonna not accept them, you know, we're not gonna voluntarily accept them on completely our dime. It's still allowing you guys to do that if there's stuff that, you know, yeah, the ordinance says you got to do this. That doesn't change the fact that I don't have a way to pay for taking care of it on my end or Pat on his end. So in that case, having that little bit of offset to sort of say, all right, well, at least we can do a minimal amount of keeping the blackberries out of the neighbors, that's a good thing for us.
I don't see that the one or two should be treated differently unless they're not required to be conserved. I think it either include all the habitat and wetlands or none of them.
No, that's a good point. I think I'd rewrite this to just say
wetlands.
And then
and associated buffers.
Because there's no
habitat.
There's no arbitrary cutoff.
Same with habitat.
Might or might not accept.
Yeah. Habitat would be the same thing with buffers, too.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Good. Thanks.
Sorry, I apologize for being late. Thank you.
Nice you could join us, Jeff.
Well, CC's already run me over. Is there any action that we need to take on this?
I don't know if there's a formal action, right? This meeting today is just sort of trying to get some input and make sure that we're not doing something completely blind.
What are your next steps?
So this has been vetted up through all the folks that are affected in public works. Some of Marty's folks have seen it in community development. Up through Mark McCauley. Next step after. If this group doesn't have any just, you know, blow-ups about it, then we would take it up to the board and probably, I think they were saying a work session possibly to sort of talk about it and just get it formalized and put on consent to make it happen.
For you guys, it'd probably be nice to have our support going in.
It would be.
So I would say, I'd be supportive of those changes on habitat and wildlife. So, In that case, if the board agrees with that, but it says, do you want to make that change first and then just have us say we support it, or should we support it with these conditions?
Well,
So I'll make a change first.
Okay, and then you circulate it back around us, and then we...
Yep.
Okay. The other thing that I had mentioned previously was those little remnant areas that could be included within a lot. But, you know, it doesn't meet zoning. I'm looking here at maximum average lot areas for certain lots, and while we try to, you know, sometimes squeeze as much out as we can, there oftentimes seems to be those little corners of land that, especially around wetland and habitat areas, that if we it were to be included in a lot, it would exceed the maximum lot area. That's why some of these little areas end up being the way they are. So I'm wondering if there's an opportunity at some point in time to have, and again, we don't want to open up a bunch of other codes, but to say...
Why not?
All right, hey.
Perfect.
For your support. Right?
Picture Susan.
No. Just to
have a
variance or an allowance or something like that that says, hey, you know, instead of this 2,000 square foot area that's just going to be left off by itself, that can't be used for, say, buffer averaging or anything like that, that it can be included and one or two lots could exceed the maximum lot size, that would take care of a lot of maybe those
situations. That's a really good idea. Yeah, some kind of, at least an opportunity for
realizing. Yeah. Oh. From a development standpoint,
that makes sense.
I mean, obviously we try to maximize all the buffering and everything else we can, but in those cases where you end up with something, if the county won't take it, then the HOA takes it. It's much better to be in the hands of one private landowner or two private landowners if it gets taken care of, you know, part of the yard and all sorts of things.
Yes. Why wouldn't that be something you would apply for a variance?
Oh, because then we have to meet the variance criteria.
And examiners are look at it like lawyers.
Well, they are lawyers.
Jamie knows.
I mean, if that were an opportunity or a possibility, then yes. But I don't think that the variance criteria is necessarily set up, or the variance.
Well, but how much do you vary by adding 680 square feet of area to a lot that's already
7,000 square feet? I mean, it could probably fall into the type 1 or type 2 criteria. It's the type 3s that are almost impossible to get. So, you know, we could certainly take a look at that. It's just another step,
sure.
Another process, another fee, another, you know.
Type 1, I would.
I mean, you may
go up to 25%, I think, without going to type 3.
You may be able just to add a small section to the typing variance process if you're on in specific instances where the county agrees.
You know, there are two ways to approach it. A simple way would in some kind of management decision for community development where we have these little, you know, these residual pieces that just fold into a lot, we could write some policy around that. But once it triggers something a little bit more substantive for an examiner to look at, then we would want to make some change in code. You know, given, you know, kind of pairing that with this policy, and it's something that, you know, if we're quick about it, we can get into a spring biannual code amendment.
I mean, especially on short plats.
I don't think it's overly complicated. It doesn't need to be overly complicated.
I think you're talking maybe 15 words.
I mean, and who wouldn't want a bigger lot?
Did you propose the 15 words?
I was just going to say,
he's going to send those over to Jeff today.
No, I think that if that was something that staff would support, it could take care of those situations.
I mean, you're only going to see them in a handful of the subdivisions,
right.
And you're only going to see, you know.
But it moves towards taking care of one issue.
You're either going to be something you add to a yard, or then you start getting to something that actually may be a benefit to the HOA, the community, a little larger or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
Criteria, but it's common sense. Mm.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
It makes sense, Jeff, Dean. Good presentation. Thank you. Just a little tiny, maybe wordsmithing. Maybe I'm missing something here. But if you're going to make a couple changes, the on the last three bullet points, the middle one, shall be minimal and may not exceed 25%, et cetera, without incurring funding, the funding, tripping the funding mechanism,
okay.
Something
yep.
like that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you. So do you feel like you have enough input from us?
General support from the board.
We've
done motions via email before.
Yeah, everyone's very responsive.
Jeff, real quick. On that criteria, so there's two sections that my suggestion affected. One was eliminate high quality, category 1 and 2, and then add associated buffers. And then that fifth bullet would be any lands required by the county to be set aside as undevelopable lands.
Under that same.
Yeah, and I had a feeling that one might get missed, so I wanted to repeat it.
Lands required by the county to be set aside.
As undevelopable. So if they're required to set it aside as undevelopable land, then it should be considered at least as criteria.
Great.
Then it covers, it makes it more future-proof because there might be something new that comes up, like biodiversity area, you know. So, okay. Sounds good.
Thank you. Well, Marty, time flies.
Yes, it does.
The time marker placement?
Yeah, so I want to introduce Carol Brown. I think Carol has been here maybe once or twice before. She's my program manager, project manager for Tide Mark Replacement, and she's taken time out of her busy schedule. And the work that the group is doing is really remarkable, and we have a project room that you go look at it and you see what's going on. It's like it makes your head spin to some extent. So I'll turn it over to Carol, and she'll give you this high-level status of where we're at.
Hey, Carol, do you have the privilege of working with Marty on a regular basis?
I do.
Sorry about that.
You're not going to hold that against me, right?
We love you, Marty.
So I was here about 10 months ago, I think, and some of the faces look familiar, but I'll just give you a real high-level overview of the project, remind you where we're talk about our successes, what we've gotten accomplished so far, what we've got in the works, and you know, kind of where we're going, how the project is progressing, the health of the project, how everybody's functioning on the team. So we are a multi-year project. It has morphed a little bit as we've adjusted to our vendor, as we've adjusted to staffing on the project and just the overall process of getting a very large system like this implemented. Four phases. We started out with a pilot project with our new home construction. The next big one that's underway currently is our building and fire departments. The third phase will bring in our land use engineering, public works group, forestry as well. Phase four, we'll look at bringing on board our code enforcement, animal complaint, pet licensing, and our community planning. And then the icing on the cake is the electronic plan review, which we're forecasting out a little ways, but it is nevertheless probably one of the most exciting components of the project altogether. So like I said, we have completed our new home construction. It is live in the system. We went live back in June. We started out as a pilot project. It was strictly lien submittals within a subdivision in the urban area. We had several contractors that we worked really closely with. Overall, it was a very big success. We have an online public portal, so folks are actually submitting online for those permits. We have roughly 300 that have processed in the system. They're in one state of either in review, under construction, or have already been issued their COs. So that has gone pretty smoothly. We also went live with our mechanical and plumbing permits back in October. The really neat thing there is those are quick permits online. So you pay, you apply, you pay, and you print your permit. You don't even need to come into the permit center for a visit. So that is something that is very exciting. We've had roughly 500 permits that have been processed in the system, either already issued or final. And then the plumbing permit as well, same type of process. 63 or so have been issued and 94 completed. We've also introduced our IVR inspection scheduling system, so we have it for our current Tidemark system, and then we're also running it for our new land management system, which is Posse.
What's IVR mean?
The interactive voice recordings where you call in for your inspections.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
You have the same question.
Oh, yeah, IVR. Interactive voice recognition.
The January of this year, we also did a huge push to get our impact fee changes in the system, and that was a definitely a significant challenge, making sure that that worked successfully and was tested and went live with no issues, which was very positive for us, and we've also had some system enhancements. So right now what we're actively engaged in working on are our fire permits. We're in the process of doing user acceptance testing today. In fact, staff are downstairs working through all of that. Fees have been quite the challenge for our fire permits. We'll be bringing folks on for training, additional staff, and then we have our mobile and IVR as well that we'll be providing to the fire inspectors, which will be something new for them. So they're all looking forward to that very much. And also being able to schedule those inspections and request them online as well will be a new feature for them. We'll also be expanding our new home construction, so we've been pretty restrictive in what we've been allowing, but we're going to expand that to tax lots and also extend into the beyond the urban area. And we'll be bringing on many new system users and additional reviewers. So we're expanding into other programs because of the potential for environmental impact, and we'll be reaching out beyond some of the development engineering folks will be potentially tapped, wetland habitat will be potentially detapped, gorge, shoreline reviewers. Those will all be coming onto the system.
Quickly, before she gets to the last item, November, December, a point to make is the system that we went live with, imagine that you have to have a two-way connection to every other system that we have. So it has to talk to our GIS, Property Information Center, to get that property information. Mm-hmm. It has to talk to Tidemark. Mm-hmm. It has to talk to our financial management system. It has to talk to a teller cashiering system. So it has upwards of a dozen different APIs and interfaces, and it's two-way. So an IVR is another vendor that we have. It's a vendor out of Portland, so that's Selectron. So there are these releases and these phases. It's more than just a single vendor with a single system. It's all the connections that are made between the Posse LMS system and all others. So
right.
Just to give you a sense of the complexity of these systems.
That's a very good point, Marty, and that's one of the reasons why the number of permits that has rolled out has been relatively slow. The building of that framework for the system and all the interconnectivity with the other programs and the other financial systems that has taken a lot of time, and it was really important to get that nailed down. So November, December, we'll shift gears. Well, actually, we'll shift gears when our fire permits go live here shortly in March, and then we'll focus on the remaining 22 or so residential and commercial permits. One other point to make is that we are still running a dual system. So we have our existing Tidemark system, where all the permits live today, with the exception of the three that we've already gone live with. And we'll have to maintain that system until we bring all of the others over. For building and fire, By the end of the year, we won't be having any new permits in the old system. All new permits will be in the new system, but we'll still have some existing open permits that reside in our old system. And eventually we're going to get to where we're down to a single system when we tackle the data migration, which will be another really key component. So after our go live towards the end of this year, we'll start to focus on phase three and eventually phase four, but phase three is when we really tackle the land use planning, wetland hab, like I said, and then development engineering, the inspection component, which Dean will be very excited about, and then forestry. Hopefully we'll start some preliminary discussions towards the end of this year, probably the December timeframe, so we've got everybody else live and building, and the rest we can start focusing and shifting gears. I expect that the phase three is more than likely going to go a bit faster because we'll be able to run parallel. So we'll be focusing on our land use process and having those discussions, and we'll be able to also run our development engineering focus for public works, and then the forestry component and land use as well. So I think that we'll be able to tackle that in the year time frame. It's our goal to do that. And that's hopefully, we'll take that live towards the end of 2018. Phase four, code enforcement, like I mentioned, will be in the first quarter of 2019 is what we're projecting at this point. It really is a crystal ball, and it does change quite a bit depending on the situation. So we've definitely had our challenges on the project. I've already talked about a few of them. With parallel systems, we're still required to do paper submittals, so we have that process that we're trying to work with. Resourcing on the project team has been a struggle. In particular, the subject matter experts that we need for this initial phase come from the Permit Center, which, as you all know, was hit fairly significantly. They've struggled to get staff up to speed, and the hiring for Permit Center, while they've been focused on doing that, it is a complicated world, in particular for Clark County, and that getting those folks up to speed is definitely a challenge. So we've been very restricted in our resources for the project, and we haven't been able to run dual analysis and requirements session for both commercial and residential. We've had to take and make these follow one after the other as opposed to running parallel, so that definitely has affected us from a timeline, overall project timeline. One of the good things and the opportunities that I point out down below is that, and I mentioned before, being able to have more resources when we get into the public works component or the land use component, being able to parallel up some of the analysis sessions. Hopefully it'll go a little bit smoother and a little bit quicker as well. We've got a great team of subject matter experts. Everybody, I think, is very excited and looking forward to this project rolling out. And hopefully it's something that we can all be proud of and make use of and benefit you guys as well.
Carol, are you meeting the original schedule that you hoped to meet?
No.
Okay.
The original schedule had us doing what they call a big bang approach,
right,
to the implementation,
kind of all at once.
You work on the different components. You go through your user acceptance testing, then you hold it on a shelf.
Okay.
You go through that through the whole thing, and then in one big lever, you turn the old system off and the new system on.
Yeah.
Our vendor advised against that,
yeah,
and we listened to them more seriously when we were at a conference with their clients a year and a half ago in Vancouver, British Columbia, mm-hmm, and all their clients were like, you do this in phases. And you build success, and people see it, and they want to get on board. The second piece to it, which is something that we've really not dealt with, and we will eventually, is the 17, 18 years now of data in the current system. How do you migrate all of that over to a new system and not lose anything? So that's been something that we've avoided purposefully.
Kick the can.
Yeah.
Just keep the old files.
So
it's easy to keep making a plan for the best approach.
So, you know, the other is just, you know, Carol mentioned it, is, you know, I don't have 2 and 3 layers of the resources and staff that we would that like to have. Mm-hmm. If I had a team of 10 people who didn't have other work to do, and that's all they did, you know, we could probably get done with this in half the time, but I don't have that luxury. So those are the couple things that...
Thank you. Yeah. Side question. Are all your field inspectors, do they have the ability to report the results of their inspection from the field? Are they all
today?
All of them. Okay.
So one thing that that has been talked about, and we've not really made much of a great inquiry or even asked, you know, even looked at what other clients of this vendor does, is to actually build an app on your phone for inspection requests. I mean, we have IVR now. Eventually, that will go away, and everything will be done through a smartphone.
Like Uber?
So there's the IVR.
Civil inspectors.
And then we also have our public portal that I mentioned, where you can go and apply for your permits online. You can also schedule your inspections there as well. And I think that that's where a lot of folks are actually turning to. I don't have any metrics on it with me, but...
But there's been some, there's been interest in, hey, you know, it would be cool if you had just this inspection app you go to. It would be through a public, through some kind of portal, and so that's something that we can ask our vendor and ask maybe their clients, but it's something that it's not part of their RFP response, because I don't think we were really asking specifically for an app. But anyway,
thanks for the update.
So my question is, when all this is done,
right?
When will the next update be?
No.
That's mean.
17 years.
I won't be here.
All a matter of retirement.
Any other questions?
It won't be 17 years.
It won't be 17.
Nice job.
It won't be 17 years.
Nice
job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you.
All right, then we're on to the work plan.
So from the last meeting, I had issues at the LLIs to the work plan. And I think really it's kind of like the outro and anything else that we need to add to the plan, we'd like to add to the plan. The board presentation of Jeff and I will be participating in on March 29th from 10:30 to noon, and you guys were all invited as well to that.
Should have seen a calendar invite on that. Everybody got it.
So I think it's just a matter of, you know, are there other things on this that we should capture? I tried to get everything on in the last meeting. I think it's there. So.
Good job.
Yeah.
Nice work, Don.
The change did was the county manager was authorized to select the manager for members. Is that based off of what we just... I guess we need to do a little tweak in our bylaws.
Yeah.
We all agree that at some point.
I think this is a good start. You're right. You need to add to the bylaws.
It's really the essence of the bylaws. I mean, the bylaws has about 2 paragraphs in there, but if you were to... condense it down, this is what you end up with. It's the county manager selects.
Yeah, we can switch that up. I'm just going to, I want to cut to the chase. So offline, I sent an email to Greg, and Greg sent an email to Mark. I said, isn't this what this really means? I mean, it's you can only make this complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But he has the authority, Mark has the authority to
make
the selection.
Perfect.
Yeah, I can see where letters of interest and resumes and stuff for somebody new coming in would make sense. But for those of us who are
old hat.
He has the authority to say, no, I don't know what you've been doing over the last 3 years.
Do we need to tweak our bylaws to at some point in the near future?
Just to make it more clear?
Yeah, just to make it a little more clear, I agree with.
We should look at the bylaws first and see.
We may want to.
It can be read, it's vague. It can be read. Strictly or liberal.
it may be helpful just to schedule a segment in our agenda where we're just going to scrub, you know, please read the bylaws in advance of next month's agenda. And we'll come in and provide any updates.
Do we have room on, should we do that next month?
For March, actually, we did have one come in. Primarily led by community planning and also with our concurrency group, concurrency code revisions. And then, Jamie, I think you mentioned something in the last meeting. I went back to listen to the audio, and I couldn't pick it up. I thought maybe you had something you wanted to come back. If you don't find it, I just want to make sure we didn't overlook it.
Okay. It's not your first.
Yeah.
It's
first.
Are we ready for that yet? Is that, or was it the, I don't know, left those things here a little bit?
I think we can wait.
Yeah. Unless there's some action.
So nothing March, and let me know when you want to get that on the agenda.
So the bylaws,
it would be almost like that right now.
We're kind of through the appointment.
Yes, I think what we find there.
Slip it in somewhere where we have time.
Yeah, my thought is maybe let's have the session with the board first. Here we're going to have that meeting in March, and maybe by the late spring, early summer, we can make a segment for the bylaw in any of the divisions there. So.
Any other comments for the work plan or additions?
We can start pulling some stuff off our work plan if we have nothing else scheduled.
Yeah.
All right.
When are we going to have draft biannual language to announce?
What do we have in the hopper,
so to speak? We had that whole committee meeting on the corner lot driveway stuff.
Yes.
And that was going to be adopted with the next biannuals. So that should be on there.
And then we have a.
It's been so long now. I was not on
that subcommittee.
Right.
I'm not sure where it ended. I thought the work that was done that needed to go into our transportation group, have them review it. So that's, I think, where it's at. But
as long as it's not rehashed.
I wasn't on the subcommittee, so.
Yeah.
I think that there was that, and then there's the
Steve Madsen's
issue.
Yes, exactly.
Bonding. I think we're in a good place there. I talked to Chris quite a bit about that, and he'd actually like to go with piloting that through developers agreements and maybe go that route.
There are some wrinkles that I've talked to Chris about recently too. So
okay.
But it's something that you all said we want to take a look at this. We're interested in moving the ball. So it's something we shouldn't, you know, we're not going to edit your interest.
Okay.
If you have it and you've expressed it.
Sounds like it may not.
It may not go through the vehicle of a code amendment. We're going to look at going through the DA right now. Chris and I have a meeting with Steve on Monday.
Stress
the project on that to see if they want to go with the DA on it. So.
I can tell you we brought it up at the government affairs meeting at the BIA, and there were quite a few builders that were very interested in it because they had some of the larger builders like Scott Lifestyle Homes, New Trad, you know, they were very interested in it, and we're looking to start taking advantage of it as well.
Then we need to take a look at the language.
That's my suggestion, because if you just do the one because you think it's just a one-off thing,
It's not.
There's a lot of people interested in it.
So, you know, there are at least two departments involved, and the prosecutor's office. And I will be honest to say that if it's something that we consider for one, We would put together language with fairly high bars. If you want to build a bunch of housing before your subdivision is complete, we may ask for not bonds, but escrows or letters of credit or something like that. We don't want to have to go to Omaha, Nebraska to some bonding agency and make our pitch and then eventually strong arm somebody to get the money, and then we have to go out to public bid and incur additional costs. I mean, that's what will happen. So I don't think Heath is interested in doing that. I know Chris is not interested in going to Omaha, Nebraska to fight a bunch of attorneys. So there's just some things. It's a give and take, right?
Sounds like you have some thoughts going on.
I have some thoughts.
Okay. Actually, it's probably less risk than a performance bond is probably less risk than a maintenance bond, where the developer's gone and done and they've moved on, that LLC is closed down. When you're looking at a performance bond like this, they have a lot of skin in the game too, because they have a house that they just financed. They're not going to get occupancy on. And you have that hammer.
Yeah.
So
it is the
chance of them pulling out and you have to go after the bonding company is much lower on that. So if you guys are having issues on maintenance bonds, I just caution you not to hold it against the performance thing, because it's a whole different issue with whole different circumstances. So, and I suspect it's the maintenance bonds that have been more of an issue. But
at the same time, a letter of credit is going to not cost the builder any money, and it's going to be less expensive than a bond is, or less of a hassle. So if you provide, at a minimum, if you provide that as an option, I think a lot of people would take you up on that.
Agreed. Yeah.
So, I don't know.
The only problem with that, and I'm going to speak against my best interest on this, letters of credit come and go.
Yeah.
You provide one today, 30 days, it could be gone.
Right.
So.
But just, I think, we've had one meeting with a group, and there should be an understanding that this is a give and take, and if we devise something and the building community is getting something out of ordinary, then maybe there should be a counterbalance to that, and that's something that Chris Horn is a pretty strong believer in as well. So if there's going to be interest...
A performance bond, Marty said, that's pretty substantial. It is different than a maintenance bond, in my opinion, too. So I'm not arguing, I'm not suggesting that your concerns are invalid.
Right. Just
hopefully there's some middle ground here that we can move forward with. Yeah.
Yeah, if it's...
There was some code amendment proposed, and it was to like the model home section of the code, which that's not the right place.
Okay.
I think it would be language in the actual land division and the site plan sections of the code, because it also, why can't Ott build some multifamily as he's completing his site improvements?
And also right now, Steve Mattson was the primary instigator on it, Chris and Steve started having direct conversations, and basically Chris's offer was, why don't we look at WSD at DA, and so at least for a couple of projects, I think Mattson has an interest in looking at that, and we're meeting Monday morning on it. So.
Well, I think Steve brought up the issue, and other builders are wanting to run with it, I guess. So.
Yeah, there's more interest than just Steve.
I would say this. I don't know a builder who wouldn't be interested in using it.
Yeah.
I would say that, to that extreme.
Terry, what do you think of the funds in escrow concept?
That's a question I'd want to talk to a bank, right? Because banks are typically providing the funding. So then you're talking about that builder can't provide those funds. So is the bank going to be willing to put those funds forward before typically they won't provide the funding until the work's completed? I really would want to talk to a Banner Bank, someone like one of the few that's actually providing development financing, and see what their take is on it. Because my assumption is they're going to say no. So that's my concern, is if it's... Now, if it's a percentage of, that's different, then maybe you could get some. But it's just if it's a full amount, I find it that the only people that are being able to do it is going to be the D.R. Hortons and Lennars, and that's like it. And that would be unfortunate. So.
And so.
And Jeff. Jeff can do it.
So the a concern is that whether it's a performance bond or a maintenance bond, but even a performance bond, so you have a developer who is doing the work, and God forbid they go on a 2-week vacation in Hawaii and they get caught in a hurricane and they're stuck there for 3 or 4 weeks and they can't get a hold of their contractor. And the contractor, we're done working here. We're going back to Idaho. Mm-hmm. So the subdivision is partly built, and then now we've got to go to a bonding company to get the other.
But there's no occupancy, so no one can live in it yet. So the big hammer is you have a house to start in. I mean, unless you make exceptions there, and that's where you guys would have to draw the line.
I don't want to start building. I don't know if you want to allow a bunch of homes to be built, not knowing that the infrastructure improvements are going to be completed.
So it seems to me we have.
Can't you put a fee in place in addition to the bond that allows, that compensates you for the work that it would take to do it?
Here's what I was going to suggest: require a 25%, whatever the number is, cash deposit that's only released once all the improvements are built. In other words, they're not using that money to fund the project. Mm-hmm. You have some surety that there's funding.
That's what it's all about. It's about surety.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
But I think we should have maybe there should be a
that's even better. Yeah,
it's kind of a subcommittee meeting of this.
Group.
I think we're going to ask. I would ask a question about how little of the improvement you want done before you can start building houses.
Yeah, totally get it. But Terry, to your point, I think there are some occasions where this would not be appropriate for certain, under certain conditions, certain financial statements.
Yeah.
And so I think it's okay to suggest that this we can make this work here, but we can't make that work there. Just the risk component's too high.
Right.
For the county.
Do we want a subcommittee on this?
I don't know. It's definitely taken on a different life than our last discussion, where it almost seemed like it was a no-brainer.
Right.
It's taken on. You talked to Chris. It's taken on a different life. It doesn't sound like it would make the biannual, and it also sounds like it's a lot more complex, and there's a lot of moving parts, which I would agree with.
Maybe there's a lower threshold, a higher threshold that could be addressed now. That's very limited. And then it can be readdressed later, so that something can be put in place now.
That's why the developers agreement may be.
And that may be the route for timing purposes.
Yes, if we start cranking up so much volume, then if we have to look at.
Then we have to look at the code amendment.
Look at code, so.
Because if you're at pavement, let's say, right?
Yeah.
And you allow for it at a pavement, when pavement's done, pretty much you're wrapped up, pretty close. That in itself, though, still provides 60 days to 120 days, depending upon all the silly stuff that can happen.
Yeah.
And that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think that's a huge... I think the building community as a whole would welcome that opportunity, if at that point. Yeah. And then the other stuff can get readdressed and looked at later.
Is he trying to put together kind of a standard... Just something, or we probably don't know yet whether it's going to be a standard DA or whether it's going to be.
And does he want to put together a whole bunch of DAs?
I mean, that's the thing.
That's the part that makes me nervous.
I guess we can wait and see. I'm not sure what the DA is going to do that code couldn't do. I don't know what the DA would provide. It's either going to provide a cash surety or a bond, or something.
As I would see it, if the concept is not proved up. Yeah. Then it's not in code, as I see it, right? You want to prove this concept up. Mm-hmm. But if you put it in code,
that's true. That's
you're stuck with it.
Hmm. That was some of the thought also. It's kind of piloted a little bit, flesh it out, see how it's working.
If this group doesn't have a problem, it doesn't sound like it's going to go into the biannuals, but it does sound like you're going to be working on a DA, at least.
We'll be working on one.
on one, so we wanted to see how that goes.
Yeah.
And get a report back to see
I'd like to see the language, if they're willing to share it, the language that comes out of that could be.
Yeah. And the threshold.
So they can provide.
Yeah. It'll go to
the threshold.
Or is it
going to
be important?
I just hate to have every single one have to
go to here. I just want my base rock sources. I want better pavement.
If everyone starts doing it and then it takes a while to approve, then the benefit goes away. Kind of like a... You end up with the same thing as a grading function. Right? Defeats the purpose.
Is there any way we can find out what that is and maybe address it next month, since we have a light month? Find out more about it, about the discussions that staff is having, about what might be agreed on the DA, what the thresholds are, what staff is comfortable with.
I think we'll have quite a bit, at least initiated, out of our meeting on Monday. I think that Steve's going to want to get going on this, so... I think it's
important for all the builders.
Yes, I think it is. And what I don't want to do is, you know, Steve brought the momentum forward. BIA was really, a lot of builders were pretty excited about it. They wanted to see it happen. If there's certain concerns that Chris has, maybe we need to have Chris come back and talk about those concerns instead of, like, delaying it. I just don't want it to lose
then
momentum.
Because we've
done a lot on it already. And I've seen things kind of get cold. You know, the road mod committee or the driveway thing is one example. I don't want to have to go and rehash that. We had 6 or 7 meetings on it. And then, you know what, and already we had like someone come in midway through and uproot the whole process, and we had to go through it a second time. So I hate to have anything lose momentum and then go cold and then us not act on it. That's a concern I have.
I think
we did.
From what I'm hearing is I think there's really not a template, and that's kind of the value added here is that maybe it's not even the board sees this, but there's no template. And so you don't get 25 different versions of this thing. The county's trying to figure out if there's actually some framework to it.
So I can definitely put it on the March agenda. I'll correspond with Chris and, you know, see if he can come in and take our questions.
Be great.
At least,
It's on our invitation.
Yeah.
You might want to try to get a hold of him in the interim,
Chris.
You might want to try to get a hold of Chris and say, "Here's what we want
to
do."
Chris should be invited to that meeting. Chris and Steve both. I mean, we're talking about this, and those are the main two drivers. So we're having a discussion, and they need to be at the table.
So Eric, back on the corner lot, and what do you think is the next? Because I wasn't on that subcommittee, so I don't know.
Yeah, we made recommendations. We had support from this board. We made a recommendation, a motion. It went out back to, and that last email I think I sent you to kind of bring it back to the table. Okay. That should be in the biannuals. The only piece that was still the county was looking at their policy on was the stop signs. Everything else we were in agreement on. So there really wasn't much. I mean, I don't know, you were in some of the meetings. We were there on everything, but they were going to look at the stop sign policy. And that they were still considering when it's appropriate, when it's not. We did that little exercise with all the drawings. And then everyone kind of decided when they thought there should be stop signs.
Basically, it's with their transportation group at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
And I guess...
I will follow on your email to Carolyn and say, hey, this is the next step.
Yep.
We need to get the transportation group. I want to get it in the spring.
Biennials. Yep.
So do you want to do it back here?
I don't know that we need to, unless it doesn't follow our recommendation. We will see it back here, because it'll be in the spring biennials, and we review the spring biennials. So I'm gonna, when we see that, I'll take out my notes, and I'll make sure everything matches, and we'll go from there. Because we had some, in that email, I summarized it, because I didn't want it to go cold, of where we were on everything, and then I sent it back.
This helps me contact, so I will follow on your email, of course, copy.
Sounds good.
I'll send it to
Karen. Yep.
We had rough language. One exercise. I learned I'm terrible at placing stop signs.
Yeah. That's good. And there's reasons why things got put.
I have to agree with that, Jeff.
The reality is, what the concept is, you shouldn't use stop signs for speed control.
Yeah.
But there's other times when they are appropriate, and then we're not using them anywhere, which sometimes it's very dangerous not to have them. One person thinks they have the right of way, and the other person thinks they have the right of way, and then it's potential collision. But you don't overuse them to control stops. That's what kind of came out of the exercise. So we need to look at a policy.
That's very good.
I will.
Good update on that.
Yes.
And we have one more good item.
we've got that?
Concurrency code revisions we will have for March. So.
Anything else? Public comment? I think for the good of the order. All right.
I had a couple of things that I mentioned. John Meyer in my office had met with Marty about the mixed use code, and he suggested they bring it up to this committee. They were working on some projects, and just had some concerns about, you know, there's some work that could maybe be done with the mixed use code to improve it. And, you know, there's a lot of cases where the mixed use, the, you know, the residential portion builds out and that commercial portion sits vacant. And there's wondering if there's just that that code is too restrictive in some cases. We're working with a couple of urban land use planners on some other projects, and their recommendation, basically the vertical mixed use is very hard to make it work in situations where there's not high densities. You know, the Rainbow Station is one where, you know, it works just due to the location. You know, the cost of living down there is so high. But, you know, we're looking at wondering if there's something that you can review. You know, maybe, you know, like we've got one project that's doing a rezone basically to meet the intent of the mixed use code.
This, do you guys have specific, you mentioned a few, do you have anything
specific language?
Was that
specific language?
Yes, yeah, specific language that you would recommend or the changes?
Well, you know, I guess it's some of it's like the vertical mixed use is one of the main items. But those urban planners who work in a lot of these areas, like Barranco Station, they suggested allowing flexibility like on the street widths and stuff, and additional flexibility on like alleys, you know, the rear loaded lots. You know, where currently, you know, you have to meet, you know, if you're doing townhomes or something, you have to meet the narrow lot standards on top of the mixed use requirements there. And, you know, there's still held to the street standards. And I think the intent of that mixed use code could be improved maybe by allowing additional flexibilities there. So,
Just a question for Marty, if I could. Like mixed use zones, are those in only in like the Highway 99 overlay? Where do those exist?
They're all over. Well, they're not all over.
There's
603 acres of mixed use zoning in the Vancouver UGA, so they're not all over.
He's a little touchy on this one.
No, just there's an exaggeration.
Throughout the county.
Let me answer more politely. So I met with John and Eric Fuller. They were looking at a property on 4th Plain out toward 162nd. It's Toddley property. It's 33 acres. It's a nice site. It's flat. It's beautiful site. It's surrounded by City of Vancouver, mind you, on a couple sides. So, you know, it's zoned mixed use, and I told John and Eric that, you know, maybe this isn't the best area for mixed use, but there is such little mixed use property in the county. The biggest, Battle Ground has the most mixed use, and they have mixed use residential, mixed use commercial. When you look at the inventory of the land zoned, it's less than 1.5% of the land that is zoned single family and multifamily. There's like 16,000 acres of single family and multifamily and 603 acres of mixed use. My conversation with them was, you know, when the county updates its plan, we have never looked at, hey, what's inside the boundary and are these mixed use properties in the right locations? And if not, maybe they should go to maybe some of it should be multifamily, some of it should be commercial.
Right.
And you do get that mix of uses on the property. It's just not in the mixed use zone. closer in, maybe along Highway 99, it makes better sense.
I said there are
some challenges there because the mixed use code does have standards that are not the kind of standards you see just straight multifamily or straight commercial. So I said one way for you to look at a solution, quite frankly, in a timeline, because mixed use is a zone and a plan designation, you might want to ask the city of Vancouver. Not that I want to give away good dirt, but it's an option for them.
And how hard would the bar be to rezone those properties?
Well, you're talking plan amendment. But it's, you know, I mean, that there's a general, you know, general question about, you know, are some of these areas most, you know, there's a scat of them around, and is that really the best use for the property? I would say maybe in some locations, no.
Brought up, and it was done during the 2004 plan. I think a lot of it was that there was this thought that you'd see more kind of mill plane development, and you have that commercial in front, an office, and some of the residential ones. And we applied on these parcels like Cottery that were like 30 acres. Had some size to it, but could accommodate that. And I think what the market is seeing is when they look at it, they just go, man, it's complicated.
So as far as the code, though, is concerned, which is what I said to
you, right?
Would we want to maybe have them come in and do maybe a short presentation on what they might suggest or what their concerns are, so we can get a better understanding? Because from an overview, I've done mixed use, where our company's got mixed use. But what are your guys' thoughts about the flexibility that you're looking for and why? That I think would help us out a lot,
yep.
Especially those that may not be as versed in design in mixed use and what the other issues are associated with it. Talk about street width, talk about lot width, talk about integration. Not everybody here is familiar with that. So if you wanted to come in and give us, you know, a 20-minute after-hour presentation here within the next couple months to have it, so that we all fully understand what the issues are, it might be something that we all haven't thought about that, you know, might set us down a little to
come with recommendations.
Yeah, and that would really help.
And then also, not that I'm versed in it at all, I just know about PUDs, why a PUD won't work for you. Why a planned unit development would not give you the flexibility to design road width, narrower road widths, et cetera, et cetera. But just come with recommendations.
It doesn't have to be anything. You know, it could be as basic as taking the code and redlining some suggestions, and then the background of why you think the suggestions are, you know, pertinent to, and, you know, whatever you want, however you want to do it, but a way to get us started and to understand what it is that you're experiencing out there. Because we like, if there's an issue, we try to discuss.
Especially in the design issue, I think the harder part is the market. When I've been to Renko Station, that's a different animal.
Hey, Renko Station went bankrupt the first time we were there.
Yeah.
It didn't even work over there.
That's a big change. It's a game changer.
Yeah, I guess one of the other things I want to point out is there's some parts of the mixed use, you know, the guidelines there that I think, like, say the Highway 99 overlay standards, those have been worked through and probably refined as some of the projects have gone through. There's a few more things that, even like townhomes and whether those are single family, there isn't much guidance in the mixed use on townhomes specifically, but then, you know, you're still required to have, you know, at least three housing types in mixed use. I'm trying to go off memory here. I think that's one of the items. But then the other thing is, you know, a developer comes in and looks at this mixed-use property. You know, he's normally looking at single-family or maybe, you know, the multifamily. But the commercial piece, too, is, you know, it's something that's not normally a good fit for one developer to come and take down the walls of that property. And I think, you know, where the rezone, you know, if you rezone to meet basically the mixed use, you know, with the commercial and multi-family residential and single family, you still kind of meet that intent, but, you know, it allows individual developers to come and take it down.
Okay. So, Seth, thank you for bringing that forward. So, any thoughts on when you may want to come back commercial on that? So, we can make sure we schedule it down there.
I'll discuss with John and maybe shoot you an email.
Okay. If you would. We have time even as early as March if you want to target that, and right now I think April is wide open, so.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Any other public comment? Suggestions? All right. Thank you all.
Not necessarily. Chuck does. All right.
How water works, along with stormwater.
Do you have to
that all belongs to the sewer district, or CPU, or the county? Based on your experience, can I move this around?
Most likely, yes. We did it several times. So you move the lines underneath them.
I'm looking at a site on Salmon Creek Avenue for potential development. Right now, it's called single families, and that is vacant. There's a sewer easement. I don't even think the line's built, but would you consider, would the district